the first question. Bhagwan, this sounds like a silly question. I am not sure that I want to become enlightened. I am surprised to see so many people around who seem to have that desire. I feel very much attached to my country and I love my work there. Still, I want to take sannyas. Is that possible? Is it not a contradiction? Goran Steinberg, all questions are silly and so are all answers. Questions come out of the mind like leaves come out of the trees. Questions are part of the mind that has to be dropped. Questions keep the mind nourished. Question is really a search for food. The answer is the food. The question is a groping. The mind is feeling hungry. It wants to be strengthened. It wants to be fed. It searches for food. Wherever it can find something satisfying, any answer that makes the mind knowledgeable, that gives the feeling to the mind that now I know, functions as a food. And the mind can go on and on, asking, collecting answers, becoming knowledgeable. The more knowledgeable the mind is, the more difficult it is to drop it. And it has to be dropped. Because unless questioning ceases in you, you will never be silent. Unless questioning disappears totally, you will not find that space, that serenity, that stillness, which can make you aware of who you are, of what this reality is. Remember, reality is never going to come to you in the form of an answer. It has never happened that way. It is not going to happen that way. It can't happen that way. It is not in the nature of things. Reality comes to you when there is no question left. Reality comes to an unquestioning state of awareness. So the first thing to be remembered, all questions are silly. And all answers too. Then you will be a little puzzled. Why I go on answering your questions? If you look deep down into my answers, you will see that they are not answers. They don't nourish your mind. They destroy your mind. They shatter you. They are meant to be socks. The purpose of my answering is to hammer your mind. It is hammering, it is not answering. In the beginning, when you come for the first time and you don't understand me and my purpose, you may think that I am answering you. The longer you are here, the deeper you become attuned with me, then you know that my answering is not to give you answers. It is not to make you more knowledgeable. Just the opposite. It is to take your knowledge away. It is to make you unknowledgeable. It is to make you ignorant. Again ignorant. Again innocent. So that questioning disappears. And when there is no questioning, there is a totally new quality to your consciousness. That quality is called wonder. Wondering is not questioning. It is feeling mystified by existence. Questioning is an effort to demystify existence. It is an effort not to accept the mystery of life. Hence we reduced every mystery into a question. The question means the mystery is only a problem to be solved. And once solved, there will be no mystery. My effort in answering you is not to demystify existence, but to mystify it more. Hence my contradictions. I cannot be consistent. I am not answering you. I cannot be consistent because I am not here to make you more knowledgeable. If I am consistent, you will have a body of knowledge very satisfying to the mind, nourishing, strengthening, gratifying. I am deliberately inconsistent, contradictory, so that you cannot make out of me any body of knowledge. So if one day you start gathering something, another day I take it away. I don't allow you to gather anything. Sooner or later, you are bound to be awakened to the fact that something totally different is transpiring here. It is not that I am giving you some dogma to be believed in, some philosophy to be lived by. No, not at all. I am utterly destructive. I am taking everything away from you. Slowly, slowly, your mind will stop questioning. What is the point? No answer. Answers. Then what is the point? And the day you stop questioning is the day of great rejoicing. Because then wondering starts. You have moved into a totally new dimension. You are again a child. Jesus says, unless you are like small children, you will not enter into my kingdom of God. He means unless you are ignorant again, innocent again, unquestioning, wondering certainly. Hence there is a difference between the question of a child and a grown-up person. The difference is of quality. The child asks not to be answered. He simply being articulate about his wonders. So if you don't answer the child, he forgets about his question. He starts asking another question. His purpose is not to be answered. His purpose is simply that he is talking to himself. He is being articulate about his wonders. He is trying to figure it out what it is. The wonder, the mystery. He is not hankering for an answer. So no answer will satisfy him. You give him an answer and he will ask another question about the answer. His wondering continues. When a grown-up person, educated, sophisticated, well-read, informed, asks a question, he asks out of his knowledge to gather more knowledge. The mind always hankers for more and more. If you have money, it hankers for more money. If you have prestige, it hankers for more prestige. If you have knowledge, it hankers for more knowledge. Mind lives in the more. And this is the way you go on and on avoiding reality. Reality is a mystery. It is not a question to be asked. A mystery to be lived. A mystery to be experienced. A mystery to be loved. A mystery to be dissolved in, to be drowned in. I am answering you not to answer, but to simply destroy the question. I am not a teacher. The teacher teaches you. The master does not teach you. He helps you unlearn. A Goran Stenberg, you see, this sounds like a silly question. Not only that it sounds, it is. All questions are, what can I do? What can you do? You say, I am not sure that I want to become enlightened. That shows how the mind functions. It is never sure of anything. Mind is always unsure. It lives in unsurety. Mind lives in confusion. Mind can have no clarity ever. Clarity is not part of the mind at all. Clarity is the absence of mind. Confusion is the presence of the mind. Confusion and mind are synonymous. You can't have a clear mind. If you have clarity, you cannot have the mind. If you have the mind, you can't have the clarity. Mind is always divided against itself. It lives in conflict. Divisibility is its nature. Hence, those who live in the mind never become individuals, indivisibles. They remain divided. One part wants this, another part wants that. Mind is a crowd of many desires. It is not a single desire. Mind is multipsychic. And all the fragments are falling apart into different directions. It is a miracle how we go on keeping ourselves together. It is a hard struggle to keep oneself together. Somehow we manage, but that togetherness remains only on the surface. Deep down, there is turmoil. You fall in love with a woman, are you sure that you are in love? Really sure? I have never come across a lover who is really sure. You may even get married, but were you sure? You may have children. Were you sure that you really wanted to have children? That's how you are living. Nothing is sure. But one has to do something or other to keep oneself occupied. So you go on keeping yourself occupied. But surety is not of the mind, cannot be. And the same problem will arise on every level. The same problem is facing you again. You say, I'm not sure that I want to become enlightened. But there must be a certain desire. Otherwise, why the question? A part of your mind must be saying, Strindberg, become enlightened. Just a part. Another part must be saying, are you mad? Have you lost your senses? You have a wife at home and children and work and you love your country. And trying to become enlightened? You must have become a victim of mass hypnosis. So many people in Orange. It is dangerous to live with mad people. So many mad people. And enjoying and laughing and loving and looking so happy. Strindberg, keep on remembering, you have a wife, children, job. Keep alert. But again and again the desire will come. When so many people are interested in enlightenment, there must be something in it. You can deceive one, you can deceive two. How can you deceive so many? Thousands of people interested in enlightenment. It can't be all bullshit. So a desire arises. Have a little taste of it. And the fear too is there. But this is the situation. Always it is so. In everything it is so. You want to purchase a car and it is the same. To purchase a Chevrolet or a Ford or a Bench. If your wife is not there to help you, you will never purchase any car. Women are more decisive. They are still less in the mind than men. They function out of the heart. Still their feeling side is alive. Fortunately, they are not yet so much civilized. They are still primitive. A little wild, leaning towards the intuitive and not towards the intellect. is still capable and courageous to act decisively. To act intuitively, to act illogically. All decisions come from the heart. Mind is never decisive, cannot be. If you want to decide through the mind, you can never decide. And I am not talking about great things like enlightenment and the existence of God or the existence of life after death. I'm not talking about great things, it's small things. Whether to purchase this soap or that. Which toothpaste? And you will find the same difficulty. Mind is fragmentary, divided. Hence, my consistently insistence that get out of the mind and start living. Mind only thinks and never lives. It thinks beautiful thoughts, but they are thoughts all the same, just dreams. Get out of the mind if you want to live. Get out of the mind if you want to live this moment. Mind cannot live in this moment because first it has to decide, and the moment is lost in thinking. And by the time mind has decided, if it ever decides, that moment is gone already. You are always lagging behind. Mind is always running after life and lagging behind and missing it continuously. Many of you must have dreamed something like this. Anand Maitreya continuously dreams like that, that he is going to catch the train and he always misses in the dream. Many people, I think almost everybody, has dreams of that kind, that you are going just to make it, and you have missed. By the time you reach the platform, the train has left. You see it leaving, but it is too late. You cannot get into it. Anand Maitreya's dream is a very significant dream and a very universal one. This is simply how the mind functions. This dream symbolizes mind. It is always missing the train. It is bound to be so because mind takes time to think. And time cannot stop for you. It goes on and on, slipping out of your hands. You never have two moments together in your hands, only one single moment. It is such a small moment that there is no space for thinking to move, no space for thoughts to exist. Either you can live it or you can think. To live it is to be enlightened. To think it is to miss. Enlightenment is not a goal, Strindberg, that you have to decide whether to take it or not. It is not a goal. Enlightenment is the realization that we have only the present moment to live. The next moment is not certain. It may come, it may not come. In fact, the tomorrow never comes. It is always arriving and arriving, but never arrives. And the mind lives in the tomorrows. And life is possible only in the present. Jesus says to his disciples, look at the lilies in the field. How beautiful they are. Even the great Solomon was not so beautiful, attired in all his grandeur, as these poor flowers of lilies. And what is the secret? The secret is that they think not of the morrow. They live now. They live here. To live now is to be enlightened. To live here is to be enlightened. To be a lily is to be enlightened. This very moment, don't think what I am saying. Don't think about it. Just be here. This is the taste of enlightenment. And once you have tasted it, you would like to taste it more and more. Don't make a goal out of it. It is not a goal. It is the most ordinary state of consciousness. It is nothing extraordinary. It is nothing special. Trees are enlightened, and the birds are enlightened, and the rocks are enlightened, and the sun and the moon are enlightened. Only man is not, because only man thinks and goes on missing. The moment you realize that you are missing because you are too much brooding, then small glimpses start happening. Small gaps in the traffic of the mind, small gaps when there is no traffic, those are the moments of meditation. They can happen anywhere. Yes, Strindberg, in your country too. So no need to be worried. You need not be in India. India has no copyright for enlightenment. It is not patented yet. It cannot be patented. You can be enlightened anywhere. You can be enlightened remaining a husband, a father, a mother, a wife. You can be enlightened as an engineer, as a doctor, as a carpenter, as a vagabond, even as a hippie. You can be enlightened anywhere. Enlightenment is not something that you have to work for, strive for. It is something that you have to relax for. Not strive, but relax. Relax. And this moment you are enlightened. Many times you will become enlightened, and many times you will become unenlightened again. Just because of the old habit. You say, I am surprised to see so many people around who seem to have that desire. If they have that desire, they never become enlightened. Either you can have the desire or you can have enlightenment. You can't have both. Either you can eat the cake or you can have it. You can't do both. If you are having a desire for enlightenment, then enlightenment is never going to happen to you. Never, never. Because desiring is what prevents it. So enlightenment cannot be desired. That will be a contradiction in terms. Either you are enlightened or you are not. It is as simple as that. And enlightenment is not caused by anything. It is your nature. So it is not a question of making great endeavors. It is not an enterprise. You need not plan for it. It is already the case. That is Atisa's first preliminary. Truth is. Enlightenment is. It is as much as the sunlight all around, sovereign. But you can remain with closed eyes and you are in a dark night and the sun is sovereign everywhere. Open your eyes and the night disappears and there is no darkness. Even when you were thinking there is darkness, there was not. It was a very private affair, idiotic. It was something eccentric that you were doing. To be unenlightened is something that you have earned. Great effort has been invested in being unenlightened. And continuously you have to go on making the effort to remain unenlightened. Just drop making any more effort to remain unenlightened and you are enlightened. Enlightenment is your natural state. It is what you are. So please, don't misunderstand my people. The newcomers are certainly desirous. They have come out of a desire in search for something. But those who have been here with me for a little longer are no more in any desire. They are living moment to moment, enjoying the extraordinary ordinariness of life. It's small things, sipping hot tea in the morning. And you can sip it in an enlightened way, and you can sip it in an unenlightened way. If sipping the hot tea early in the morning, and you are not in the moment thinking of something else, that you have to go to the morning discourse. You are unenlightened. You missed an enlightened cup of tea. And remember, if that is your habit, you will miss the discourse too, because this is again nothing but a cup of tea. Then in the discourse you will be thinking, I have to do the Sufi meditation. I have to rush and do this and that and come back. It is not a question of one moment. It is a question of your pattern, your gestalt. If this is your gestalt, that you are always rushing ahead of time, thinking of the next moment, then you remain unenlightened. And this is your effort. This is something that you are doing. For enlightenment, nothing is needed to be done. only this understanding, that why should I go on keeping myself unenlightened? That's how one day I decided that enough is enough. So many lives I have lived in an unenlightened way. And since then, I have lived in an enlightened way. This is simply an understanding. It is not a desire. You say, I feel very much attached to my country and love my work there. Perfectly good. Love your work, love your country. Go back, but live there in such simple, moment-to-moment way that you remain enlightened. Don't lag behind, don't rush ahead. Just be here now, wherever you are, whatsoever you are doing. Still, you say, I want to take sannyas. Is that possible? Is it not a contradiction? It is a contradiction. But you are living in contradictions. And this is the last contradiction. Before you can come out of your contradictory life, your life of conflict, you have to close the doors of that life. Sannyas is nothing but closing the doors. The last thing. It is simply a declaration that I have lived in the mind for so long and nothing but misery has been my experience. Now I take a jump out of the mind into the unknown. I go for a totally different kind of life. Sannyas is just a gesture from your side that yes, understanding has dawned. That you would like to come closer to me to see what actually it is. To be close to a master. To be related to a master. To be intimate to a master is nothing but an approach towards your own ultimate understanding, your own enlightenment. Your mind will make you very much frightened of the unknown. It will drag you back. And it is always safer to live with the known. It is familiar. You are efficient in living with it. To move into the unknown, you will need a guide. A guide who has moved into the unknown, who lives in the unknown, who lives in innocence. Just to imbibe the spirit, you need the guide. Not for any guidance, but just to imbibe the spirit of the unknown, the joy of the unknown, the celebration of the unknown. Once you start drinking something of the master, you will not go back to the old ways of the mind. That's what sannyas is all about. Yes, Strindberg, you can take sannyas. In the beginning, it is bound to be again the same conflict, whether to take or not, whether to go into it are not. It is natural because that's how you have functioned for many lives. This has become your second nature. I persuade you, I seduce you into sannyas. Great persuasion is needed. Great seduction is needed. And that's why I have made sannyas. Otherwise, there was no need. You could have come here, listened to me, and gone. You would have listened to me, but you would not have come close to me. This is a bridge. You would have heard me, but you would not have tasted of my silence. You would have known what I say about love, but you would not have known my love. Sannyas makes it possible. It is an energy field. It is a Buddha field. It is communion, non-verbal, heart to heart, and one day being to being. The second question, dear Bhagwan, today I saw and heard you in the flesh, and I found myself in accord with and moved and inspired by so much that I feel I must ask you two questions connected with it and another not directly connected. Why are you so against the mind? Surely we all use it and need it. And it seems to me that it is only when we abuse it, that is to say, using it as a defense against feeling too deeply and against transcending itself, that we are entitled to criticize it. The other question is concerned more with my problem. Although no doubt there are others who feel as I do, why do you find it so necessary, so important for sannyasins to wear orange and a photograph of yourself, in fact a sort of uniform and an icon? If I leave here with a feeling of love and deep respect for a wise man, a healer, I shall not need to carry his photo around with me. His image will be so too deeply entrenched in my inner self. And if I need to consult him in my mind, I shall conjure him up and see him much more vividly than if I look at a photo. I would very much like to take sannyas, but because of this last question, you may not accept me. Joyce Brent, dear lady, please excuse me. It must have been just coincidence that you felt in accord with me. It can only be a coincidence. Otherwise, it is impossible to feel in accord with me. And don't decide so soon. You have heard only once. Just be here a little more and you will see so many contradictions. Wait a little. Give me a little more time. And you will not feel in accord with me at all. In fact, this time too, It was not you feeling in accord with me, but I somehow appearing in accord with you. You have already great ideas. You are very knowledgeable. Your question is not out of innocence. It is out of knowledge. Here are so many people. I cannot say things which will shatter everybody's mind. If I say something, it shatters one's mind. It may be in accord with somebody else's mind. For him, I will work tomorrow, day after tomorrow. But sooner or later, the hammer comes on everybody. And then you will not feel so inspired. In fact, answering your question, I will make you very much uninspired. Wait. What do you mean by inspiration? It seems you already know. Otherwise, what do you mean by inspiration? What do you mean by akar? You already know and you say, yes, this man is talking sense. Sense, because this is what you have believed in always. I am not here to support your belief. I have to take your beliefs away. I am not to inspire you, because all inspiration creates slavery. If you are inspired by me, you will become a slave of me. You will become dependent on me. I don't inspire. I simply go on shattering, shocking. Sooner or later, I am here, you are here, and we are tremendously connected, but there is no slavery, no dependence. We relate, but there is no question of inspiration, because one who inspires you automatically becomes important for you. So much so that you start feeling dependent. You are searching for a father figure who can inspire you, who can put a little fire in your dull and dead life. But if somebody else puts fire in your life, he becomes powerful over you. I am not here to put any fire in you. I am just to help you to see your own fire. Be a light unto yourself. Inspiration will mean you will follow somebody else. You will imitate. You will become a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan. Sannyas is a declaration that you are no more a Hindu, no more a Christian, no more a Mohammedan. That you don't belong to any creed, any dogma. I have no creed, no dogma. Becoming a sannyasin simply means that you have declared your freedom. But certainly, the question arises, why orange, mala, and the photograph, why? This is a device, dear lady, to keep unwanted people out. This is not for the crowds. This place is not for the crowds. It is not for the mob. It is only for the chosen few. The ultimate, call it God, enlightenment, is only for those who are really courageous, immensely courageous. Because the ultimate becomes available only to those who can drop the mind and move into the immediate. The immediate is the door of the ultimate. And to drop the mind needs great courage. It is not for everybody. This is just a device. Orange is as good as any other color, or no color. It has nothing special about it. I could have chosen any green, black. That would have done. But the purpose is, it is a device. It is for people who are ready to do few mad things. Because later on, bigger and bigger mad things are waiting. If you cannot do such simple, silly thing, wearing orange, a locket, a mala, if you can't gather courage to look foolish, a laughing stock, wherever you go, and you feel absurd and ridiculous, if you cannot do this much, then this place is not for you. Because bigger and bigger things will have to be done. As you will be moving deeper in intimacy with me, I will demand more and more illogical things. Because only through those demands, the mind can disappear. There is no other way. Those demands are like electric shocks. Only then your cultivated mind, cultivated for centuries, can be shaken to the foundations. This is a simple device. Just to help people freak out who are not meant to be here. They simply escape. Seeing such a mad crowd, seeing people in orange, they become afraid, they escape. This is deliberately done. I could have made it more easier for you to be here and to gather more knowledge and be inspired and things like that. But this is not Christian Science. I am not Billy Graham. I am not here to inspire you. This is a totally different phenomenon. In fact, I am not even religious. I am not spiritual at all. All these labels are utterly irrelevant. Just to choose who are ready to go with me, who are ready to go with me to absurd limits. This is just a device. But you are more clever. You say, I can have you in my heart, entrenched deep in my being, as if you know what is being and what is death. you are cunning and clever. You say, I can conjure you up. But whatsoever you conjure will be your own mind, figment of your own mind. It will not be me. It cannot be me. You can have me only if you move with me unconditionally. No condition from your side can be accepted. And I demand sometimes things which are patently absurd, and I know that they are absurd. My people slowly, slowly start understanding that if you can do something absurd that helps you come a little looser out of your mind. Once you are unconditionally with me, then if I say go and move naked in the streets, you say okay. If you can say that simply, innocently, I'm not going to send you to move in the streets naked, the purpose is fulfilled. If you hesitate, if you say, what do you mean? Then you will have to go. These are small devices, and sometimes small devices work so deeply because you cannot detect small devices. Big devices you can detect. They are so big, any stupid person can see them. Just the other day, Krishna Prem wrote a letter to me saying that he remembers, many times he has remembered, that Divyanand, with whom he is in love, has been related for many, many past lives. In the past life, he was the mother and Divyanand was the son. And because he could not fulfill all the motherly duties in that life, that's why he is in love with Divyanand now. But now it seems that the debts are paid and Divyanand is hurting in many ways. So should I finish the relationship? I gave him a message, go and talk to Tirtha. He was very much hurt. Naturally, he was talking such big things. He must have waited that I will say, Krishna Prem, you have arrived. Remembering your past lives. This is great. This is your first Satori, Krishna Prem. He must have deep down waited for this. Rather than saying anything about his great experience, I told him to go to Tirtha and talk. That must have hurt him deep down. Because I have not directly answered him. I am sending him to Tirtha. I am not paying direct attention to him. I am sending him to Tirtha. And who is this Tirtha anyhow? Krishna Prem being sent to Tirtha? Krishna Prem is
as highly evolved as Tirtha, so why? Or maybe he is even higher, holier. Why? Why to Tirtha? For 2 days he lived in great despair. Now such a small thing and he could not detect. It took 48 hours for him to detect. Then he understood that this is just a shock to my ego. And then immediately that understanding and all despair disappears. That understanding, just that moment, and all darkness was gone and he was light, happy, back again to his natural being. But 48 hours to detect, now there is no need. Krishna Prem, you need not go to Tirtha. Now I will find something else. Small, very small things are more difficult to detect, for the simple reason because they are small. Big things you can see. When there are mountains, you can see. But just a small grain of sand, it is undetectable. Joyous branch, if you want to be here, if you really want to relate with me, you will have to learn a totally different way of relating. I am not a teacher. So if you are only a student here to be inspired and all that, I am not a missionary either. I am not here to convert you to some philosophy. If you are really to relate with a master who has no knowledge but who knows, who has knowing but no knowledge, then you will have to relax a little. You will have to drop your ideas of how things should be. Remember always that many times it happens, you want to become a sannyasin, but you forget who is the master and who is the disciple. And you start deep down expecting things from the master to fulfill. He has to be according to you. Then he is right. But any master worth the name can never be according to you. People who are according to you are politicians. They know that you will follow them only if they are according to you. That is a mutual arrangement. They have to follow you to make you followers of you. That is a mutual exploitation. That's what political leaders are. Followers of the followers. They go on looking at you, what are your expectations, and they go on fulfilling them. I often, in every way, I cannot fulfill your expectations. If I start fulfilling your expectations, I will not be of any use to you. Then really you will be the master and I will be the disciple. Who is taking sannyas from whom? This has to be decided in the beginning. Am I taking sannyas from you, or you are taking sannyas from me? Let it be very clear. Many times you take sannyas and it is not clear. and you want me to be this way or that way, to live this way or to live that way. And if I am not according to you, then you are disappointed. The real master will always disappoint you. He has to disappoint you. This is how slowly, slowly chunks of your mind will be broken, taken away from you. I have to continuously hammer. And I have to be from the very beginning absolutely clear about it. The orange, the mala, the picture have no other purpose. The purpose is that you have to know clearly that it is you who have to unconditionally be in accord with me, and you have to drop all expectations of my being in accord with you. Only then the work can start. Those who are ready for it, sannyas is only for them. Those who are not ready for it, sannyas helps them to run away, to get lost. You say, why are you so against the mind? I am not against the mind. I am simply stating the fact what the mind is. If you see what the mind is, you will drop it. When I say drop the mind, I am not against the mind. I am simply making it clear to you what the mind is, what it has done to you, how it has become a bondage. And it is not a question of using it or abusing it. Mind itself is the problem, not use or abuse. And remember, you cannot use the mind till you know how to be without the mind. Only people who know how to be without the mind are capable of using the mind. Otherwise, the mind uses them. It is the mind that is using you. But mind is very clever. It goes on deceiving you. It goes on saying you are using me. It is mind who is using you. You are being used. The mind has become the master of you. You are a slave. But mind is very clever. It goes on buttressing you. It says, I am just an instrument. You are the master. But watch, look into the mechanism of the mind. How it goes on using you. You think you are using it. You can use it only when you know that you are separate from it. Otherwise, how you will use it? You are identified with it. If you say, I am a Christian, you are identified with the Christian mind. If you say, I am a Hindu, you are identified with the Hindu mind. If you say, I am German, you are identified with the German mind. This identification has to be broken. You have to know that you are not the mind. And only in moments when the mind is not functioning, when you are unoccupied, when there is a gap, stillness, silence, when the mind has ceased, you will be able to know who you are, to know yourself as consciousness. Then you can use the mind. I am using the mind, Brent. You are not using the mind. So how I can be against the mind? I am not against the mind. I may appear. But the whole effort is to disconnect you from the mind so you can know your separation, your freedom. Once you know your freedom, you can use the mind. Then it is a beautiful instrument, one of the most beautiful instruments. Man has not yet been to make something better. Even the biggest computers, the most efficient computer, is not yet capable of doing things that the mind can do. A single mind can contain all the libraries of the world. It is tremendous to think of the powers of the mind. But because those powers are great, there is danger also. They can overpower you. That's what has happened. Because mind is such a beautiful, powerful instrument, you have become possessed by it. You cannot use it anymore. It uses you. It directs you. It gives you programs. It goes on goading you into directions which it has decided to follow. It does not allow you any freedom. It does not leave you any choice. Unless it is convinced, it won't allow you to move even a single inch. So who is the master? You cannot be the master unless you have come to know that you are not identified with the mind. The man who is identified with his car cannot drive it. The car will drive him. And then some accident is bound to happen. You have to be separate from the car. You have to know that you are separate. That car is beautiful. A beautiful mechanism to be used. It can perform many things. But you have to be separate. You say, why are you so against the mind? Surely we all use it. No. All cannot use it. Only very rarely there is a person who uses the mind. A Buddha, a Jesus, a Atisa, a Tilopa. Only very rarely, far and few in between. Otherwise you are used by the mind. No, all are not using the mind. Otherwise what will be the difference between a Buddha and you? There will be no difference. You use the mind and Buddha uses the mind. What is the difference? Buddha uses the mind, you are used by the mind. That's the difference. And Buddha can use the mind because he knows he is utterly separate. And remember, it is not a question of abuse. If you cannot use the mind, how can you abuse it? It is the mind, whether it uses you or abuses you. You cannot abuse. When scientists discovered atomic energy, what do you think? They used the mind or abused it? When the atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Albert Einstein could not sleep the whole night. For days, his night was disturbed. He could not sleep. He could not rest. He was really terribly disturbed. He had been instrumental in creating the atom bomb. It was he who wrote the letter to the President of America that atom bomb is possible. Now the question arises whether Einstein was consciously using his mind, writing the letter to the President of America, releasing this powerful information to the politicians. Was he aware of the consequences? Was he ever thought of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? That thousands of people will be burnt within seconds for no fault of their own, innocent civilians? No, he had not thought about it. He was not conscious about it. In fact, he was not even alert to what use atom bombs will be put to. And before he died, somebody asked him, if you are born again, what would you like to be? Again, a great mathematician, a great physicist, a great scientist? He is reported to have said, no, never. I would rather like to be a plumber. But now it is too late. Einstein had one of the most beautiful minds. Did he abuse it? Do you think the scientists who have created great technology and destroyed the whole ecology of the earth, have they used their mind or abused? If one day this planet Earth is going to die, it will be because of the great minds of the 20th century. Because if in the whole history of humanity there have been 100 scientists, 99 happen to be in the 20th century. In fact, 75% of the great scientists are alive, of all the ages. Mind has come to such a great momentum. We have created great technology within these 100 years, within these 10 years, but that ecology is going to destroy this earth. Who will be responsible? And what you will say? The scientists used the mind or abused it? If you ask me, I will say they were not masters of their mind. They neither used nor abused. The mind used them, abused them. Science needs now great meditators, otherwise this earth is doomed. Science needs now people who can use their minds, who are masters of their being, who can use science in a conscious way. Otherwise, we are on the verge of committing universal suicide. Man cannot live the way he has lived up to now, more than 25 years, unless a drastic change is made. And the greatest thing that can be of help, which can help humanity to survive, and the earth is still go on living, and this is a beautiful earth. Compared to this earth, millions and millions of stars are just dead. No flowers bloom, no rivers flow, no birds, no animals, no people. This universe is almost a great desert. This earth is alive. Something tremendously important, consciousness, has happened here. But this consciousness is still not a master. It is a slave. It has to be freed. That's my work here, my basic fundamental work, to help you be free of the mind so that you can use it. And if you are the master, you cannot abuse it. That is impossible. When you are alert, conscious, meditative, abuse is not possible. If Einstein had been also a Buddha, there would have been atomic energy but no atom bombs. And the atomic energy would have become a blessing, the greatest blessing ever. The earth would have become a paradise. But Albert Einstein is not a Buddha. Unfortunately, he knows nothing of meditation. A great mind, but the master is missing. A great mechanism. A great aeroplane without the pilot. I have heard that they had made an aeroplane which could go to farthest distances without any pilot, pilotless, automatic. There was great thrill and enthusiasm. And the first flight and the automatic mechanism communicated to the people that we are moving on such and such height at such and such temperature with such a speed, and please be at ease, don't be worried, nothing can go wrong, nothing can go wrong, nothing can go wrong, nothing can go wrong, and it went on. It has already gone wrong. Think of those people. What must not have happened to those people now? What to do? Great science is there, a byproduct of mind, but in the hands of slaves. Buddhas are needed to possess humanity. And one or two Buddhas won't do. Many, many Buddhas are needed in every field, in every direction, in every dimension of life, so that mind can be used. Otherwise, mind was never so efficient as it is now. And that is the danger. Mind was never so clever as it is now, was never so powerful as it is now. We have given atom bombs in the hands of children. If no accident happens, that will be a miracle. Every possibility is that the accident is bound to happen. Children are playing with atom bombs. Politicians are the most immature minds in the world. Only third-rate minds become interested in politics. Mediocre people. And people who are suffering from inferiority complex, they become politicians. And in these people's hands, atom bombs, hydrogen bombs, and lesser beams, and this and that. You can seize any moment. I may not be able to finish my discourse. Any moment we are sitting on a pile of hydrogen bombs, and there are so many. Unbelievable how stupid men can be. We have so many hydrogen bombs that we can destroy every single human being 700 times. Now what is stupidity? For what? A man simply dies in a single time. If you want to be very cautious, twice will do. But what is the point of 700 times? And they are continuously creating more and more. The whole earth is full of hydrogen bombs. We can destroy 700 earths like this. And still, 70% energy is being put into war efforts.
This whole earth seems to be a madhouse. And you say, Branch, that surely we all use it and need it. And it seems to me that it is only when we abuse it, that is to say, using it as a defense against feeling too deeply and against transcending itself, that we are entitled to criticize it. I am not criticizing it. In fact, you will be able to appreciate it more if you understand what I am saying. You will be able to use it more if you understand what I am saying. If you become a transcendence to the mind, a witness to the mind, and you know that you are separate, and the mind has no more any sway over you, you are no more hypnotized by it, then you will be able really to appreciate it. I appreciate it. And you will be able also to use it. And you will never be able to abuse it. A conscious person cannot abuse anything. The last question. Bhagwan, I have noticed that when I see a woman who is particularly lovely and I am taken into that sweet silence, I forget all about philosophy or religion. But I am lost and found entering a moment. I think animals are wise because God does not trouble them with metaphysics. Still, I want to throw my books out, but still, I like them. David Light. A woman is a metaphysics, a philosophy, a poetry. So is a man. Certainly, one will forget metaphysics and philosophy when one comes across alive metaphysics, alive philosophy, alive poetry. That simply shows that you are still alive. To appreciate beauty, to be drowned and drunk by it, is something immensely valuable. You would have been something wrong if seeing a beautiful woman and you still remembered the Old Testament or Bhagavad Gita or Quran. That would have shown that something is wrong with you. It simply shows you are natural, human. Let this sensitivity grow. And slowly, slowly, as you become more and more sensitive, more and more sensuous, you will see more and more beauty around. The deeper is your insight, the greater is the beauty. And when you see this whole existence as a tremendous dance, a celebration, you are liberated by it. It is celebration that liberates. It is love that liberates. It is beauty that liberates. It is not metaphysics or philosophy. But I am not saying that you have to throw your books out, because there are beautiful books too. They are byproducts of great experiences. Don't be lost in them. But to read something of Shakespeare or Kalidas, or to read something from Buddha or Atisha, is to move in the same world of beauty from a different door. There are many doors to God's temple. Beauty is one, wisdom is another, love is still another, and so on and so forth. Music can do it, poetry can do it, literature can do it. The flowers on the trees are beautiful. What do you think of great poetry? They are flowers of consciousness. You need not throw your books. In fact, in throwing your books, you will be simply saying that you are still attached with them. Hate is nothing but love standing on its head. Love doing sirsasan, headstand. Love, hate are not separate, they are one. In fact, we should stop using these two words separately. We should make one word, love, hate. Not even a hyphen is needed between the two. They are simply one energy, like hot and cold, like summer and winter, like life and death, like darkness and light. There is no need to throw the books, enjoy them. And there is no need to stop enjoying the beautiful form of a woman, because that too is divine. Enjoy life in all its dimensions. Why this continuous obsession to become one-dimensional, either this or that? Why not both? Why live in a either-or? Why not live in a both-and? That's my approach. Live in a both-and and drop living in either-or. Soren Kierkegaard has written a book, Either-Or. He lived his whole life in either or. He could not decide whether to marry the woman he loved and tremendously loved. He could not decide that either or continued for so long that finally the woman decided to go with somebody else. For years, he could not decide. His book became so famous, he
he himself became very famous, that when he used to walk in Copenhagen, urchins and children and people will shout behind him, "Either are, either are. Here goes either are." Even children had come to know that he used to stand on crossroads thinking where to go. Either are, to move this way or that. Both roads are leading to the same goal. Both are going to the station, but which one to follow? And he will stand on the crossroad thinking for hours. He lived only in thought. He was really a metaphysician. His father has left a heritage, so he had enough money. So there was no need to work either. So the whole day, 24 hours, he was thinking. And when he had drawn the last money from the bank, coming home on the way, he dropped dead. He did well. Otherwise, he would have been in difficulty. My feeling is that he must be thinking to be or not to be. Either or. Because now there is no money left. He must have suffered a heart attack between that either or. That has been his whole way of life. There is no need to choose. Why not live choicelessly? Why not live all that life makes available to you? Don't be a spiritualist and don't be a materialist. Be both. Don't be a Zorba and don't be a Buddha. Be both. Zorba, the Buddha. Enjoy all that God has showered on you. That's my message to my sannyasins. You are not still my sannyasin, David Light. But if you start living in totality, accepting all, giving each moment its due, respecting all, and when a beautiful woman passes and suddenly you are thrilled, that shows you are alive, that you are not dead yet. But this need not be just a sexual stirring in you. That is very poor. It has to be something more. It can be a spiritual stirring too. I am not against sex, but to live only a sexual life is to live life at the minimum. Why not live the whole spectrum of it, from sex to samadhi? When a really beautiful woman passes by, if only your sexuality is still, then the animal is alive, but you are not. But if your spirituality is also still, then you are alive in your totality. And to be alive in totality is the way to God. Enough for today.